There once was a people whose countless number stretched over great and many lands. And throughout these great and many lands, this people commanded great wealth and power. Their world stretched from sea to shining sea. In order that all lived in good and proper order, throughout their lands, every person spoke in the one language, so that all could follow the imperial codes and decrees. And though their lands were great and the people were many, they knew that even the greatest of peoples eventually went to the dust, their names worn down and scattered by the winds of time. So this people decided to build a great tower, a tower that would stretch to the skies, even piercing heaven itself. Never would their name disappear from the peoples of the earth. All would speak their language. All would follow their ways. All would live by their rule. All would know their name. And so they built. Higher and higher they built, drawing upon the vast resources of their great and many lands. And then one day, the living breath of the world visited among them to see what this people was doing. The swirling spirit of all life saw the tower that was beginning to rise and saw what surely was to follow. That soon this people's wish to always be, their need for security for all time at any cost, their monument to their own way for their own good, it would slowly and surely crush all in their path. One way of speaking used only to make sure that their name would be known forever, this, like their tower, could not stand. And so the breath of all life moved among the people, confusing their language, baffling them as they attempted to build their tower to the name of the people. Soon every word from their neighbor's mouth turned to babble. This was no way to run an empire. Schedules could not be met. Decrees could not be understood, let alone obeyed. No longer could they control all the great and many lands from sea to shining sea. And as time went on, in their confusion, their ways became so different that they could no longer recognize each other, and they began to move away, scattering to the four winds. And their name, instead of reaching to the heavens, was now left only swirling with the shifting sands. The great story of the Tower of Babel is one of the many bizarre and baffling treasures of the book of Genesis. Taking place just after the flood and right before Abraham begins his generative journey, the Tower of Babel serves as an essential backdrop to the story of the Semites, also known as the Shemites, or the descendants of Shem, which in Hebrew simply means a name. It's fascinating that directly after this mythic story about a people, most likely the Babylonians under Hammurabi, after this story about a people who wished to control all around them under one language in order to make a name for themselves, comes the fundamental story of Abraham and Sarah, the names from whom the people of Israel are known. For it is out of the babbling, out of the scattering of the nations, that one nation emerges among many, a people called Israel, from which its genesis, its very beginning, is blessed to be a blessing for the world. That is their vocation. Abraham's covenant with God, heard later in this book of Genesis, that by your offspring shall all the nations of the earth gain blessing for themselves. This covenant only makes sense because of its backdrop. Out of the diaspora of nations, from the fall of an empire, a priestly people are sent out as a blessing for the peoples of the earth. Now, this blessing will not be brought forth without pain, struggle, or strife. The people of God are still people, after all. But this blessing is their end, their purpose in a fallen world. They are blessed to be a blessing. Now we can talk about the wild outpouring of the Spirit that burst forth those 50 days after the resurrection of Jesus the Christ. Because without this ground, without this foundation, it is easy to mistake what happened when those followers of Jesus started acting way out of control. For when you witness something as out of the ordinary as this was, it is hard to comprehend just what might be taking place. That's why some of those gathered that morning mocked the disciples for being a few bottles in at 9 o'clock. Removed by millennia, we too, though, are challenged by those bizarre events. And so we need to ask the same question that they did about this wild encounter. What in the world does this mean? Now, it is far too easy for us to read into this story our own context and to merely see a first century corporate cultural diversity training session. Or, in the words of the Episcopal theologian, the Reverend Harold Lewis, another occasion to have you make me a taco while I sing you a spiritual. This is often our approach to difference, whether of religious experience or of culture, to water down and thin out our differences as if to pretend that there is nothing of distinction to see here, folks. Please keep moving. But just hearing another's language without understanding it is simply a return to Babel. And that is not the case in this remarkable text from Acts. In this story, we witness a miracle of the tongue and a miracle of the ear, a coming together on common ground, all the while allowing the other to remain distinct. A kind of radical communication for communion that demands patience, openness, courage, and humility. And paradoxically, we also know all too well the other side of Babel, that of rigidly enforcing one language or monoculture, acting as if there were only one way of communicating and knowing God's movement in this world. What we must remember is that in the dynamic interaction of the Spirit in our story from Acts, it was not a dissolving of language into one mother tongue to serve an empire. The disciples were not speaking in one language to serve the Pax Romana. They were telling of God's deeds of power in all the languages and dialects of the gathered. The gifts of the Spirit that Paul so eloquently writes of in 1 Corinthians, these gifts are intentionally varied. They are not the same gift given to all. They are many given in one service, blessed to be a blessing. It is Babel-esque nostalgia to believe that the Spirit who troubled the waters at Pentecost, bringing the disciples to public mockery and then to dangerous action, that this Spirit is simply a doctrine to be believed rather than a swirling, disturbing, life-giving activator. That same Spirit we read about today and that is in many places in the Acts of the Apostles and throughout the centuries is still on the move. The Spirit is loose and dangerous. Whenever the rule of the empire attempts to stifle life in order to build towers of dominion. Whenever there is a faithful witness and a religious and righteous truth-telling, the Spirit is present. Whenever the young see visions of a peaceable kingdom that is deemed naive, and whenever the old dream foolish dreams of shared sacrifice and common good, the Spirit is present. It is for this reason, friends, that we gather as a body, as a church this day. For we gather this day to recall the movement of that wild breath of all life and to recognize that same Spirit moving in Molly and Cliff and Charlie, all to be baptized in a few moments. We gather to remember that this church is only a manifestation of the body of Christ, only a reiteration of the people of God, when we know with every breath we take that we, like the people of Israel, have been blessed to be a blessing. And that is why we are here today. This is why we as a body exist. All Souls Parish, the Episcopal Church, the Anglican Communion, the Christian faith. We are not here in and for ourselves, but to be a blessing for the world around us. Using the language, cultures, and ways of being where the Spirit is already moving, it is for us to encounter together the means of our collective grace. For this we have been called, and to this end we are to serve. Because in our prayers and through our practice, we must never forget that we have been fed to feed. We have been gifted to give. We have been reconciled to reconcile. We have been blessed to be a blessing.